Hello, and welcome to step three of our program. The program entitled Stepping Stones to Healing and Thriving. So, in this step, we are looking at our communication challenges. It's entitled From Silence to Strength, Getting Your Needs Met Through Compassionate Communication. So, this step will clarify a healthy way to communicate your needs in a self-aware and assertive format. Similar to the nonviolent communication strategies, the workbook provides excellent examples on how to do this and suggestions on when and where we can practice healthy communication skills. So our goal is to provide clarity on communication challenges and help build confidence in your communication skills. In this step, we will look at why communication can become a challenge for you, like most childhood trauma survivors, and then how to learn and adopt a compassionate and proven strategy for mutually respectful and dignifying dialogue. In doing so, you can get your needs known and most likely met. And identifying what these needs are is where we need to begin. So, before we get to that part, we're going to do an overview of what that will look like. Step one or module one is about acknowledging or understanding what's going on. So, we're going to look at what are your needs, what are your communication challenges, and why. And then module two is about rebuilding, letting go of your limiting beliefs and learn healthy communication skills. And then in step three or module three, we're looking at the skill development through practice, where you can enhance your confidence for speaking out. So, module one, what is behind the communication challenges? Well, we all want to be able to communicate effectively. We are designed to live in community and to feel emotionally connected to others. So, we ask, well, what happened? Well, all too often, childhood trauma survivors never learned how to communicate effectively, and this is through no fault of their own. But first, let's explore three possibilities as to why that is. Trust issues and fear of vulnerability. Survivors of childhood trauma, especially those who experience betrayal, neglect, or sexual abuse within close relationships, often develop deep-seated trust issues. And this can manifest as a fear of being vulnerable or opening up to others. They may have learned that sharing their thoughts and feelings can lead to negative consequences like judgment, rejection, or further harm. So as a result, they may find it difficult to communicate openly and honestly with others. Or there could be the difficulty in identifying and expressing emotions. Early childhood trauma can disrupt the normal development of emotional regulation and awareness, and it can impact the speech-language centers of the brain. No doubt you've heard the expression that someone who's witnessed or experienced a trauma, and when you describe them, we can say that they were left speechless, pardon me, speechless or dumbfounded. That means they are in such a state of shock they cannot speak. So that is no exaggeration on the impact of certain traumas. Besides this, many survivors may struggle to identify and label their own emotions. In extreme cases, it is sometimes referred to as alexithymia. This can make communicating difficult, as they may not have the language or the emotional literacy or self-awareness needed to express their feelings. Additionally, their emotional responses might be disproportionate or misaligned with the current situation, which then can further complicate communication. Or maybe the challenge is because of internalized negative beliefs and low self-esteem. Traumatic experiences in childhood often lead to the internalization of negative beliefs about oneself, like one is worthless or inadequate or unlovable. These beliefs can hinder communication in several ways. Survivors may fear or be led to believe that their needs, thoughts, or feelings are not valid or important, and it leads them to stay silent or downplay or minimize their experiences, and they hold themselves back from engaging in conversations. Yes, so low self-esteem can result in a lack of confidence in their ability to communicate effectively. So your corresponding workbook will support you as you delve into this a little bit deeper. And so we invite you, feel free to pause the presentation right now and go to your workbook, and it will help you identify what your needs are. It will help you assess how your needs are or aren't being met. And you will be able to reflect on any patterns or obstacles that are happening. So now we're going to be learning about healthy communication skills. And here we're talking about compassionate communication, or otherwise known as nonviolent communication. So in your workbook, these two wheels exist, and I invite you to feel free to print them off and laminate them because they are very helpful in improving your emotional literacy. So again, when we're raised in an environment without emotional literacy or self-awareness, or the mention of basic human needs other than hunger, sleep, thirst, and so on, we do not learn how to express ourselves and ask for what is needed in a healthful way. Instead, we either suffer in silence through developing our limiting beliefs, or if we risk asking for a need to be met, the request is not met at all. And then what happens? Well, resentment can build after we start to feel frustrated and hurt. In time, we might express ourselves when the feelings build up to the point that we are well beyond frustration and fearful or feeling shame, and anger and resentment might come out. So, bottom line, we might not have learned how to communicate respectfully and assertively when needed. So, for people to meet their needs, they first need to know what their needs are. And we can see this in the needs wheel. Maybe you had no idea that you might have a need for meeting. Maybe you didn't know that you have a need for order or for structure or a need for fun and play. But these are all basic needs. So, what happens when these needs aren't being met? We start to develop limiting beliefs. And from when our needs are met or unmet, these core beliefs, again, are often behind the decisions and choices and our speech patterns and behaviors. So, we're just going to examine a few of these limiting beliefs. So, one, the belief, if I express my needs, people will reject or abandon me. This often comes when there's a feeling or fear of abandonment or rejection. Or what about this one? I don't deserve to have my needs met. Have you ever had that thought? That might stem from the belief of unworthiness, which we talked about in step one. Or expressing my needs will lead to conflict or anger. Has that been your experience? Well, then that means it comes from a fear of conflict or a fear of losing connection. So we don't want to express our needs. Or what about this one? Being open about my needs makes me vulnerable and weak. So that might be what might be behind that could be a fear of vulnerability, or perhaps a fear of rejection, or low self-esteem. And this one, I don't even know what my needs are. Well, that comes from a lack of self-awareness, or perhaps a fear of unworthiness. Some other beliefs might be, I should be able to handle everything on my own without needing help. Or if I express my needs, people will think that I'm too demanding or difficult. Or I've been hurt before when I tried to express my needs, so it's safer to stay quiet. So, do any of these resonate with you? So, when we address our limiting beliefs, that is how we start to transform our communication style. So, self-compassion is really important because it helps us recognize that having needs is a normal and healthy part of being human. Reframing our beliefs, by doing that, we challenge and reframe them with curiosity and confidence. And then there's the inner child work, where we validate the inner child's feelings and needs. And how to practice a proven effective way of asking for needs to be met is just coming right up. And this is the communication cube. It is often part of the nonviolent communication process. So, to meet our needs, we start off by noticing what is happening. We make neutral observations instead of assessments or evaluations. And we use I statements. So, for example, if someone is doing something to you and you are feeling irritated or disappointed or you're feeling hurt, it's best to start the conversation by naming the action or the event that is causing you to feel that way. Then you share what it is that you're feeling and why. And then it's usually because a need hasn't been met. Then you proceed with a request. So, for example, when I am interrupted during our conversations, I feel disrespected and unheard. I need to feel heard and valued. Can we work on taking turns speaking so that both of us can share our thoughts fully? You see how it follows that square? It follows that pattern. So you notice how using I statements instead of you statements, we didn't start off by saying, when you interrupt me, I feel disrespected, right? It used the I statement when I am being interrupted during our conversation. So you talk about your experience. This is the challenge that exists. Because if we start the conversation with the word you, what happens is the listener will often go into a defensive mode. And when that happens, it's difficult for them to hear what you're saying. And so negative feelings can escalate. So that's why it's important to focus on the problem or the issue or the behavior and not the person. So when we use I statements, it's important so that the other in the conversation does not feel judged, criticized, or verbally attacked. So, in practicing the compassionate communication cube, you are setting and maintaining boundaries, and you are being true to you. So, take the time to notice your internal responses and external interactions. Then reflect on what happens inside of you when you want to speak up. See if there are any limiting beliefs that surface that may be getting in your way. Be curious. So we learn how by practicing. We practice communicating your needs. You build healthy neural pathways that will be reinforced by greater confidence in yourself and your communication skills. We want our conversations to be mutually dignifying. So in time, you will be efficient It creating a safe space for open communication for both you and the person you're communicating with. So what supports that is by choosing a time when both individuals are relaxed and are more open to ideas, and when you can engage in that conversation without interruptions. It would be wise to ensure that the physical space that you're conversing in is comfortable and private, and where you both feel safe and at ease. So this place should be familiar and non-threatening, especially if you're a trauma survivor. So you'd want to avoid places that could trigger past traumatic memories. The person you want to practice with, you'd want it to be someone that you trust and feel safe with, such as a close friend or your partner, or maybe your therapist would be willing to help you. So this person should approach the conversation with empathy, patience, and understanding. And then there's active listening, right? A conversation is a two-way street, as expression goes, or like you're tossing the ball, you're doing it one and back and forth with the other person. So active listening means we are getting our needs met. It is a reciprocal situation. We need to listen and listen well. And perhaps you've noticed that the art of listening is less common than what it used to be. Some seem to be afraid to hear a thought or opinion that is different from theirs, and they close their ears, literally. And unfortunately, what happens is that this leads to greater estrangements and divisions in both our personal life and in our professional life. And that's really sad because we crave communication and connection, right? We have to have communication in order to have that connection. So, being a good communicator means listening more than speaking. Healthy and respectful relationships include a reciprocal dialogue and the exchange of ideas in a safe and encouraging environment. So, it helps to think about the purpose of the communication or of the dialogue. Is it to win the discussion, or is it to share ideas and to get to know each other better? Is it to draw people together and to feel connected? Or is it just to create polarization and division? So we all need to feel heard in life. When we feel heard, we're more apt to listen to others. So active listening includes several skills. And as the slide says, it involves eye contact. So we give them our full attention. It involves our feelings of empathy and patience and understanding. It means that we would participate in the conversation and ask clarifying questions and then responding thoughtfully. The intention, remember, is to be understood and to understand. It's not to win arguments or to look for ways to criticize the individual or what they're saying. And keep in mind about nonverbal communication, right? 55% of what we communicate is nonverbal. That involves our body language, which means our posture, our hand gestures, and our facial expressions. Did you know that only 7% of our communication is actually based on the words we say? 33% is actually on our tone, our pitch, and our intonation. So there's a lot that goes on that involves healthy and effective communication. So again, feel free to pause the production or this live presentation and go to your workbook. You can follow the prompts as you identify the patterns that you have in communication and how they have been impacting your life. And notice the shifts that happen as you practice compassionate communication. Now we're into module three, enhancing confidence with skill development. More practice. Yes, we must practice and practice. So the best way to build compassionate communication skills starts with low conflict situations. Or Even better, when we're expressing to someone how what they say or does causes us to feel happy or loved or safe or appreciated, we can still follow the four steps in the communications cube, right? Because we often want that behavior to be repeated. So by expressing how much we appreciate that and how it makes us feel, and then it's meeting a need, it's a win-win situation. The key to practicing the skills is important because as we do so, it becomes easier to and we feel more confident in these skills, and then we feel ready to follow the pattern when the stakes might be a little bit higher or even much higher. Like that could be when we are communicating with our boss, or we need to talk to something serious with our partner or a friend. Maybe you need to set a boundary with someone, or ask for a raise, or perhaps even offer constructive criticism to someone that you care about, but you don't want to hurt their feelings or jeopardize your friendship. So all of these helps build your confidence as your own communication strength grows. So we notice. We take note of incidences where you've successfully asked for and received what you've needed. Permanent changes in behavior and skills come when we see the benefits of doing so. Positive reinforcement is a wonderful thing. And we want to celebrate our accomplishments. So spend time noticing and celebrating all the big and little wins that you are having as you work through this program. And in particular, in this step, in moving from being silent or holding yourself back to having strength and confidence in your voice, to believe that what you have to say matters. You are gaining and adopting valuable skills so you can lead an authentic life where you feel that you are being true to yourself and you're taking care of your needs so that in turn, you can show up and be there for others. Amazing things happen inside of us when we give ourselves what we didn't get as children. We feel strong and confident. So every step that you take towards clear and compassionate communication is a victory in your journey of growth. So you may pause the work, pardon me, the presentation now, or continue on to the final slide. Either way, you're invited to go back to your workbook and follow the directions and do the activities. And so you are practicing integrating that compassionate communication format and putting it into your daily life. So the goal of this step, remember, was to explore ways to move from feeling silenced and voiceless to one of strength and confidence. And compassionate communication is one tool for your healthy coping skills toolbox. And you've reached the end of this presentation. So, congratulations on completing this step three, from silence to strength, getting your needs met through compassionate communication. This presentation is aimed at giving you a healthy communication strategy so you can feel more confident when asking for what you need. So, thank you for being here and showing up for yourself. Remember that you have the strength to overcome stress and trauma and to celebrate your achievements every day.